You know, what I love about both of you is that you've found your way to your true selves and you make no apologies.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels. I'm Stacy, even though I don't sound like it.
She did that on purpose, you guys, just to throw me off, because it's been so long since I've been on and said, I'm your co-host, Angie.
Yes, yeah. So, Stacy and Angie, we're back in the studio for yet another round of Hustlin' in Heels podcast. If you have not subscribed yet, what are you doing with your life? Go out to Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcast, and click that little subscribe button. While you're out there, we would love a rating or a review. 5 stars only, please. And keep sending us those messages, because we love those and we love your feedback.
I need some wine recommendations, guys. Mm-hmm. Give me some wine recos. Mm-hmm.
So we're happy that you're joining us again this week. We've had just some fantastic guests on as of late, and we're going to continue that streak tonight. So in the studio tonight, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, Ange?
Are we going to talk about wine first?
Yeah, but I think maybe we'll have them talk about the wine.
Yeah, okay. What do you think? That makes sense. That's right. Fine. Okay. I was just going to mention, I went to Holland this weekend.
Oh.
And found a great, actually, Jessica Springer, our travel blogger guest.
Well-planned adventures.
Absolutely, well-planned adventures. She recommended that I go to Cherry Republic up there.
Oh, yeah, I like
and
that
it was
place.
Fantastic. Loved it. 5 tastings, absolutely free. And they had tastings of other stuff. They had, like, this really great jam out, like the salsa and all of those things. So if you guys are in Holland, check it out. It was fantastic.
I'm telling you, the places that don't charge me for tasting, I buy more wine. I don't know why they don't do that more
often. I bought
often.
2 bottles. Yeah. I bought a bottle of ice wine and a bottle of sangria that was amazing. Ugh. If you add seltzer to it, I might go back up there just for that.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Oh.
So anyways.
All right, cool.
Yeah, going down that path. But yes, back to the ranch. We do have some guests in the house tonight. Super excited about this. Melissa and Sam are friends of mine, but more than that, they're sort of hustlers too, and we're super excited to talk to them. Melissa Luckleitner and Sam Lewis are in the house tonight.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
Thank
what are you guys
you
drinking?
Us. We are splitting a delicious bottle of Oliver, a red blend from Oliver Winery, which ironically enough, we are going to be down in Bloomington at Oliver in, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
2 weeks. Sam is a big birthday coming up.
32.
32. Ooh. So we're gonna
you're hit so up. Young.
You're such a baby.
Such a baby.
So we're going to try more than the red blend, but this is quite tasty. We are thoroughly enjoying it right now.
Awesome. Sam, what do you think about it?
I love wine. So, you know.
She likes it.
It's hitting all the taste right now.
There's a reason why I'm asking Sam questions, and it's because I'm trying to draw her in slowly and surely from the beginning. I'm just putting it out there.
You guys,
a few more glasses.
Don't let her fool you. Sam likes to talk. She's chatty. It's how we used to work together, and we had great conversations. So we'll get her there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you all are enjoying that wine. So we're going to go ahead and sit back, and we're going to learn a little bit more about our guest. If you are listening at home, perhaps it is an occasion where you can join us with drinking wine, but maybe you're listening to us in the morning, you know, when you're getting ready. So that's kind of frowned upon. So maybe it's some coffee.
Fine. No, you can drink wine in the morning too, guys. Don't. Nobody will judge you. It's okay.
Okay.
I won't judge you.
I like it.
No judgment from us.
That's right. So, Melissa, let's start with you. So tell us a little bit about what you do today. Let's start there.
So I am actually almost on my 1 year anniversary. So I work at the University of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I am my formal title, right? All these titles are so ridiculous, I think, these days. So my formal title is Regional Director of Athletics Advancement.
Does that fit on a business card?
Small print,
yeah.
Small font. Uh-huh. Yes. So basically, I am a fundraiser for the athletic department. So trying to cultivate relationships, work with former student athletes, current alumni. My favorite are the people who have no affiliation with the university, but just love it, have an affinity for it, want to support it. and trying to raise money for things like financial aid and internship opportunities for the student athletes, study That's abroad awesome. Programs, kind of everything under the sun for the athletic department.
Yeah. And that comes with a lot of travel, doesn't it?
A ton, yeah. So I've got an interesting territory. I cover L.A., San Francisco, and also Philly, D.C., and Baltimore. So pretty much 1 week on the West Coast, home for a week, kind of 1 week on the East Coast, home for a week. And I try to keep that schedule because – you know, nothing good happens when you're sitting at home behind your desk, right? It's all about getting in front of the people, relationships, the engagement, all of that. So my travel is intense, but, you know, it's very independent. I can plan everything. I schedule around any events that we have. It's very flexible in that way. My boss is awesome. So as long as I'm working hard and, you know, still getting out there, it's very flexible, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Now, give me an idea of something that you do when you go out and you're traveling. So you talk about events, you talk about meeting with people. So give me, I'm sure there is no typical week, but
yeah, you're right.
Give me some ideas of what that means.
Yeah, so a pretty standard trip. I'm actually flying out tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., flying to Baltimore, driving straight to D.C. I've got a lunch meeting just with a couple. So, you know, every meeting is very different, right? Some are intro meetings, so it's the first time you've ever obviously met them. You're trying to just learn a ton about them, ask them a ton of questions, you know, figure out what they're passionate about at Notre Dame, if they played a former sport, you know, are they still kind of engaged with the program, kind of just trying to figure out kind of where they lie with all of that. You've got other meetings, again, where you're just kind of trying to move the needle a little bit, right? Maybe you know what they're passionate about, trying to figure out, okay, is this something that you are interested in supporting? I specifically work with leadership level donors, we call them. So those are six-figure level gifts and above. So, you know, when we're talking to people, it's, you know, 100K and above kind of thing. Could be, you know, an outright gift, could be stock transfers, things like that, could be pledge payments over 2, 3, 4, 5 years kind of thing. So every meeting's a little different, but you are, I mean, my territory is obviously very broad. So even when I'm in LA, it could be 2 hours east of LA. So it's, you know, maybe a quick coffee meeting and then you're hustling to a lunch and then you're hustling to another coffee and then a dinner and maybe you're meeting somebody after work for a drink kind of thing. So it's extremely enjoyable. It's a grind, right? Just like anything. You're kind of all over the place. You're running to meet somebody. You're super just mentally exhausted when you're done. Because you have to be so zoned in, right? You're listening for everything. Because as soon as you're done with the meeting, right, you want to record all of your notes so you know what they're interested in. You want to know about their family, what they're doing in their career. You're listening for kind of also some giveaways, right? Like, will they actually support the program and things like that? You know, do they have the inclination to do that? So, that's like a typical week.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, with events and football games, there's, you know, a ton of different things around those types of events. But that's a typical travel week. You know, Monday to late Thursday night is a typical travel schedule, or sometimes a red eye home from California. But it's full go when you're out there.
So let's talk a little bit about that drive. I'm really curious to get into sort of, I mean, you've done a plethora of things, but have you always had that drive, even from when you were younger? Have you always been that way?
I have. I was, I would say I was like not your average normal kid. I always knew what I wanted to do. I had, like, when I was in middle school, I had a notebook where I had goals written down, what I needed to do to get there. I would like record my workouts and, you know, obviously basketball specific, would like just, I was a weirdo. Like, I was a freak about it. I just always had a drive to whatever I was doing. I wanted to be great at it, right? Whether it was school, straight A student in high school, just always wanted to be the best at what I was doing. Work hard, right? Play hard, even enjoying my wine, right? I'm not going to have one glass. I'm going to have maybe a bottle kind of thing. So yeah, I would say I was, it was definitely part of my DNA. It wasn't something that I figured out later in life. It was early on and kind of has always been a part of me.
So you just mentioned basketball, always sort of basketball driven. So tell us, you're local, right? You're pretty local.
Mishawaka.
We record in Southwest Michigan, but just over the state line, you've got a, you know, Northwest Indiana, and you're right from there.
That's right. Born and raised in like the middle of nowhere. My parents still live in the house that I grew up in. And very country, we would call it, Sam.
Yeah. Sticks.
Out in the sticks. Yeah, not a lot of neighbors, so grew up in cornfields. But yeah, Mishawaka, Indiana.
And you played ball.
I did play a little basketball.
Yeah?
Yep.
You played ball.
Yep. Just a little?
quite a few, yeah, few years. I yeah. put some time in. Yeah, graduated from Notre Dame, played there, went overseas for about four years, played professionally over there. And my first year I was in Germany, and then I played in Iceland and Puerto Rico, Finland, and then finished it off with one more season in Puerto Rico because everybody needs a little more time on the beach.
Absolutely. So while you were overseas, like what was your favorite country? What was your favorite place?
So favorite place to live in out of those that I mentioned was Puerto Rico. Just it's apples to oranges comparison, right? Not even fair. Like I literally lived on the beach. One of my best friends played with me. So we lived together. So hard to compare it. But Iceland is absolutely amazing. Have either of you been?
No, it's on the list.
You got to go.
It is.
Like the nicest people you will ever meet. Food is great. Scenery is just absolutely stunning, right? If you like kind of outdoorsy nature stuff, it's awesome. So loved Iceland. But, you know, just being in Europe where it's so easy to travel, you can hop on a train and you're in a different country, or literally you're driving 30 minutes, you're in a different country. So I loved to travel. Any off day I had, I was like constantly on the road and just trying to see and, you know, experience as much culture and history as I could.
Yeah. So what was it like playing internationally, professionally, really? You know what? I think we need to go a little bit back farther, though. I want to go a little bit more chronologically. No, that's okay. I'm just thinking it in my head. If I'm listening, I'm thinking, but wait a minute, I want to know about how she got there first. So you're playing ball at Mishawaka. What high school did you go to?
St. Joe High School. So I was Grissom Middle School, was PHM school district, was supposed to go to Penn High School. Yep. Ended up going to St. Joe for high school.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So did you know in high school while you're playing ball, are you getting recruited? What was that experience like?
Yeah, so the recruiting process starts pretty young, and I think it's even younger nowadays. But in middle school, I would go to recruiting tournaments. I played kind of up, right? So I was playing on a team with, honestly, my sister and some of her high school teammates. So was getting looks in, you know, sixth, seventh grade kind of thing. It got very serious probably going into my freshman year of high school. But it was in my little notebook that I talked about with my goals, right? Starting varsity as a freshman was one of them. A major Division I scholarship was another. I never actually like mentioned that Notre Dame was my dream school, although it was. But it was always in the back of my mind. I got recruited. They offered me early, so I was a sophomore in high school when they offered a full scholarship. I waited like 2 weeks, right? It was my dream school. I knew that's what I wanted to, you know, kind of stepped away and acted like I was thinking.
Yeah, let me think about it.
Yeah, asking all the tough questions.
I mean, I am a sophomore and all.
I know, and I just didn't want to, you know, some people want to kind of, which is great, right? Use the experience, and you're going to a ton of different universities, and you've got official visits, and you're being wined and dined, and that's fine, but it just wasn't kind of something that I wanted to do and like jerk people around. And I knew I wanted to go to Notre Dame. So I was like, when they offered, I was all over it.
Yeah. How much of that was wanting to stay local, being a local girl?
A good part of it, honestly. It's funny. I'd love to travel and, you know, kind of have been all over a lot of the world. But yeah, there was a huge piece of that I definitely wanted to stay local. And obviously it's a great program. So was extremely lucky in that regard. But I would say Maryland was probably the furthest that I was looking, talked to their coach a good amount. Local was a huge piece of that for me.
Nice. So you're a sophomore, then junior, then senior, this whole time, you know where you're going, you know where you're headed.
Yeah.
How did the drive continue even though you kind of knew where you were going to be landing?
Yeah, absolutely. It was nice because it removed that stress piece, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of, you know, high schoolers, whether they're juniors or maybe they're even in their senior year and they still haven't committed and they're looking for an offer, looking for a scholarship, and it just can eat people, you know, just eats at you kind of thing. So I was extremely grateful for that. I didn't have that stress piece, but there was always the drive, right? I mean, shoot, my high school was literally, I could look out my window and see Notre Dame's campus. Right. Like I knew that the coaches were following, and if they would see me drop off or anything like that, or, you know, heard through the grapevine that I was dogging it or something like that. I wanted to be better every single day kind of thing. So the drive was, you know, never in question even after I committed.
Academic, same way?
Yeah, absolutely. I was 3.9. I graduated with a 3.9 in high school. Was pissed that I didn't get the top 10 at St. Joe, but
it's competitive there, though.
It is. It's right? competitive. I mean, the top 10 were ridiculous. I mean, they were awesome.
Were they like 4.5?
Oh, God, yeah. And I was like, But yeah, academics absolutely was still, I don't know what it, like, I don't like failing in life. I don't like not achieving goals. I don't like kind of selling myself short. So yeah, even academically, when looking back, I probably should have relaxed a little bit with the books and things like that. But it was, I didn't know how to.
And you ended up going to a school with a coach who is equally as driven. I mean, Muffet is on the big stage these days. And what was it like to play for her?
She is, I just had coffee with her this afternoon. She is amazing, first of all. Exactly what you see is what you get with her, right? Like, she is extremely intense. Her basketball IQ is off the charts. We had an awesome relationship. I was very fortunate for that. And, you know, every player is different, but we were really close. She puts a lot of trust in her point guards and has an extremely high expectation of point guards, right? Because they're running the floor. Mm-hmm. They're calling the plays. They're directing the traffic, the whole thing. They're the leaders on the floor. So she entrusts a lot of that leadership into you. So we had a great relationship. You know, I'm so thankful I could walk in her office and, you know, say some things that maybe she didn't want to hear, like, coach, this is what we're feeling as a team. And, you know, she would check in and ask. And we just had this awesome open line of communication and trust. You know, she could say things to me that maybe she couldn't say to every single person on the team. And, you know, we didn't always agree, but it was just nice knowing that, you know, I could walk in the office and we could have an extremely candid conversation. Right, whether it was X's and O's, whether it was the team dynamic and culture, whether it was my personal life, it didn't matter. She is someone that when you play for her, right, she is going to be your ally for life kind of thing. She wants the best of you and she expects the best of you, right? She's extremely intense and, you know, if she's not happy with you, she's going to let you know about it. So it was, you know, there were ups and downs, but she is incredible, right? Like, obviously, she's huge in the media recently and well-deserved. She's amazing.
It sounds like she was pretty instrumental in not only your professional athletic growth, but just your personal growth there.
Yeah, it's funny. I think about kind of like my career trajectory. And when I was done playing basketball my senior year, I had no freaking clue what I wanted to do. Like, I was very burned out from basketball, candidly. Didn't think I wanted to continue the professional track, so didn't try for the WNBA. Kind of took 6 weeks and, you know, just didn't touch a basketball. And I was like, oh, God, I should probably figure this out. Like, graduation is approaching. And, you know, talked to coach and she's like, what about coaching? Like, you would make an incredible coach. And I'm like, no, I just, you know, I'm not ready for it kind of thing. And I'm like, but maybe, like, I don't know who I am without basketball. Like, basketball is who I am. Mm-hmm. And she just looked me straight in the eye and she's like, basketball is not who you are. She's like, it is what you've done and it is what you know. But she's like, you are so much more than basketball. And just, like, said it, you know, when someone, like, kind of just, like, shakes your core a little mm-hmm. bit with something they say. And it was kind of the first time where you walk away, you step away from it and you're like, yeah, damn right. I'm more than bad, you know? Yeah. Like, and so.
And somebody you trust, right? Yeah. Like, it has to come from somebody you trust who you know has your best interest at heart.
Exactly.
And when they say something like so profound, purposefully to you, yep. like, you have to take something from that.
Oh, God, yeah. And so then you walk away and, like, obviously you kind of go back to the drawing board, but you just have this, like, new sense of confidence that, you know, leaving college and everything you know in basketball, like, that's a huge transition. And I was, you know, I finally figured it out and did the overseas thing, and I'm really glad I did. But had I not, like, I had a ton of resources I could have mm-hmm. you know, tapped into and things like that. And just you've always got Coach Morrell kind of in your corner with you know, she would do anything for you.
Yeah. So when you're at Notre Dame and you're playing 4 years there as a collegiate, you know, athlete in a Division I school, a high profile Division mm-hmm. I school, it's not just any school. Is there a level of pressure that comes with that? And did that pressure fuel you? Y'all know what I mean? Or were there times where, you know, it got you down a little bit?
So for me, I think, honestly, the most pressure I felt was to represent the university and the community in the manner that Coach McGraw wanted us to. I mean, that's a 24/7 job, right?
Sure.
I will never forget one of my really good teammates, Erica Williamson, who I love to death. We were just at our bachelorette party this weekend. What up, E, if you're listening? we were walking out of some restaurant. Actually, I think it was IHOP. Yeah. It was after, like, a pregame meal, like we always eat as a team before. And she walked outside and, you know, typical, you know, it's May 7th. I have a Patagonia fleece on right now because you never know what you're going to get in South Bend. And we had walked in and the weather was great. And we walked out and it was like a blizzard.
Yeah.
And she made a comment and was, you know, obviously probably had a curse word in there, but was just like, are you kidding me, South Bend? Like, come on.
We're explicit here, just so you know.
All right. She was
you
like,
can say whatever you want.
South Bend. Like, and somebody heard her, wrote a letter into Coach McGraw, complained about it. Coach addressed E. E then wrote, obviously was extremely upset about it, wrote an apology to this fan. And I mean, so.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like you just walk away from that situation and you're like, everyone, whether they know you or not, right? Everyone is paying attention.
Yeah.
And that was before social media was at the point where it is now.
Because when were you playing there?
I was 06 to 2010.
Okay.
You know, but Notre Dame women's basketball has such a following. Mm-hmm. And part of that is from Muffet McGraw.
Oh, gosh.
She is, she has built such, I mean, it's a dynasty, but she is so well respected for so many reasons within the community and really, I mean, nationally for the way that she presents herself, for the way that she coaches her teams. It's very apparent that every single team that she runs respects her.
Oh, yeah.
And, it comes across, and it's really built the fan base behind every women's team that's come along. And I would say that Notre Dame's women's basketball team has one of the best followings of any of the women's teams across the board for that reason, which means that you guys would have been on like under a microscope, constantly in the public eye, so much more than maybe some others necessarily would have been.
Yeah, and like you said, like the fans are so loyal, and like that program means so much to them. So, and honestly, Coach sets the standard, right? She is one of the busiest, most right. You walk in the town of South Bend, everybody knows who she is, and she still signs every autograph, she takes every picture, she goes to any event that she's ever asked to speak at or be a part of. Right. So like she sets this extremely high standard. Right. And then just kind of matriculates down through the team. We, you know, she required us to, if we got an email from a fan, we responded. Right.
Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I believe that. I mean, she was.
That's amazing.
She was the guest speaker of my eighth grade middle school all sports banquet for Buchanan Middle School.
Oh, my God.
We had Muffet McGraw as our keynote
speaker.
That's
amazing.
Who knew back then?
I mean, but she was even popular back then, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
She is a true hustler in heels. Legit.
Legit heels.
Like,
heels.
She
lies. No lows.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, yeah. I mean, so it's just really a testament to her because I remember even back then being like, and I was in middle school, what's Muffet McGraw doing at a middle school gym? Like, you know? And so I believe that.
She's
that she,
awesome.
That she goes to everything and does everything. And
Coach, if you're listening, we need you on here.
Yeah, right? She would do it. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. But seriously, though, that was like the pressure that I felt was like, do not fuck this up in public, right? Like, don't get caught at the party. Don't be the person in the newspaper that was arrested or whatever the situation was, right? Like, it was just like, I'm representing Notre Dame. Whether anybody knows me or not, they probably didn't, but it was just, it was like the constant, you know.
Because her disappointment is devastating.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Yeah.
And she sets that precedent.
Absolutely.
Good for her.
And the pressure.
That's amazing.
But the pressure to go to the party or to be a part of a college experience is probably equally.
The dichotomy.
I mean, I found a proper balance, I think.
Yes.
I managed to enjoy myself over the age of 21, obviously.
Right.
Obviously.
And somehow I stayed out of trouble. Thank God. But yeah, I mean, right.
I mean, because let's talk about like
all silly.
Well, that, and you're on a stage, you're under a microscope, you have this pressure to perform and be, a responsible role model, but you're 19,
right?
You know,
right.
Like,
so exactly.
That's got to be quite a dichotomy.
Yeah. I mean, anybody you think about that gets in trouble and you're like, well, probably could have been me at some point or I did that exact same thing and I was just lucky enough to not get caught. And yes, I took the proper precautions to stay out of certain situations or, leave if there was ever anything.
But kids.
But absolutely.
I
could have 100% been in trouble. And one of my best friends and former teammates I was speaking of Bloomington Oliver Winery. It was like one of the rare weekends we had off postseason. And me and one of my best friends went down to IU, hung out with friends down there. Our other best friend stayed back in South Bend, was at this huge party. It got busted by the cops, the whole thing, right? It was in the media. I mean, just like soul crushing for her. She, you know, Coach McGraw knew about it. She got suspended. I mean, the whole thing. But it was like, had we not gone to Bloomington for that one random weekend, we 1,000% would have been with her.
Yeah.
We were like the three amigos. So, you know, just sure. Sometimes you get lucky and other times you try to be smarter than the situation or avoid it. But yeah, it's hard. That is, I feel bad for the kids these days because I felt the pressure then and I can't imagine what they feel now with social media and everything you do is posted or
and
followed.
And spin of media too, right? Exactly. I mean, the spin of media is really tough as well. I mean, I come from a journalistic background and knowing what the headlines can do. It's tough.
Yeah.
It is really tough.
I mean, one of my friends I was talking to her today, she's a mom, and she was talking about in her MOPS class, they were going through like social media training for raising your kids around social media and how you manage that and navigate it. And I'm just like, oh my God, that is a world that I don't know about.
It's a little terrifying.
I mean, it's difficult. So my son is on Instagram, right?
But how old is he?
Oh, not old enough to be on Instagram, but he is. he's kind of, he has his own sports show on YouTube and he had like Inside Sports with Cy Carlin and, he talks about Notre Dame cause he's a big Notre Dame fan. And he also like has done these, he had a YouTube channel when he was six that I didn't know about.
Oh my gosh.
I think I might've told the story in here maybe in season one, but this is back when I was teaching and I got a text message from my mom. She said, did you see Cy's new dance video? Did you see Cy's new video on his YouTube channel? And I was in the middle of teaching and my heart just dropped because I thought,
Oh my gosh.
No. How is my six-year-old son on YouTube? So I get to my break and I go on YouTube and I type his name in and he loved dancing when he was little. So he used to like be up in his room and he'd watch these dance videos like Justin Timberlake and he would learn all the moves and then he'd put his iPad up in his room and he'd play the song on like his sister's iPad and he'd do the dance routine and then he'd post it. This is Cy's dance tutorial. And he had like a little bit of a lisp back then and he'd be like, this is Cy's dance tutorial. And he would do it. And so that's all it was. But it speaks to the point, right? Like kids, these digital natives, like I was like, how did you know how to get a YouTube channel first of all? And how's my mom your subscriber? Right, and I don't even know. Right. Like grandma's giving you shout outs and I don't even know.
But Cy's gonna be a social media guru though. He is. I mean, you just went to a social media conference and you asked him about a certain something and he was like, oh mom, I can run that for you.
Yeah, so he's got that mind.
Yeah, he's got it.
Yeah, so then I did. I was at a social media conference and they're talking about TikTok. So I text my 10-year-old and I'm like, Cy, when mom gets home, I need you to show me how to do TikTok. And he was like,
You spelled it wrong
and I'll run it for you. And I'm like,
all I can think of is the Kesha song. Like, I'm like, TikTok? No, what is that?
It's a video. It's a thing.
It's a new thing. So he had he has an Instagram and, but I said, you know, mom watches it all the time, all the time. And so do all mom's friends. So he posted something on his story and I looked at it and I was like, mm-mm. And it wasn't even anything bad. It was like one of those, like, this number, if you want me to say, and I'm like, nope, mm-mm, nope. The only things you are allowed to post about are baseball, hockey, football. That's it. Like, we're not posting anything else.
Otherwise, don't play.
And he was like, mom, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that. And I'm like, hey, just know I'm watching you constantly.
Yeah.
And I will take your phone at any point from now until you're 18 and look through everything. And he's like, mom, I know. I'm like, okay.
That's right.
So it's definitely scary because I'm not of the mind that I need to keep my kids off of social media. I think there's responsible use of it. And I think that, again, this is the age that we're in a way, you know, especially Cy, he does kind of have that entrepreneurial spirit. So I can see him using it and kind of that learning through that way. But the monitoring of it is like so crucial.
But I mean, and even like, kids are in college and college athletes are like, people are just waiting for you to mess up, man.
Because you're
a headline.
Yeah. Yep.
You are their money maker. So they are just waiting for you to take the wrong step.
Yep.
To spin that story as well as they can. and make as much money off of it as they can. I mean, sure. I've gone to bat on social media because of like the ridiculous headlines that have happened over certain articles. And I'm like, this is just gross. I mean, it is misleading and it's unprofessional journalism sort of a thing. And they just don't care. Mm-hmm. So as a professional athlete, collegiate athlete these days, I can't even imagine because you're still a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you're a role model and yes, you're taking on these certain responsibilities, but at the end of the day, man, like you don't have the life experience to know things.
Right.
I mean, you just don't.
That's why the obviously the recent conversations around sports gambling and legalizing it, right? Yeah. The collegiate, I mean, it is so dangerous. Think about any of these 18 to 22 year olds, right, that are college athletes, whether it's they missed a free throw at the NCAA national championship game or what it was a field goal kick and they missed. They are kids. And if people are now losing tens of thousands of dollars on your mistake and then you have to go back to your dorm room or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's just an awful, awful situation.
Can you imagine the messages they're getting?
No.
The emails, the messages, the Snapchats, like, the whatever.
The TikToks.
The TikToks. I'm like, no, I don't know what that is.
I don't know if you get messages on that. I'm just saying it. Sai, do you get messages on that?
No, so funny. So I'm kind of curious. You went overseas and traveled after this. Like, you know, Coach McGraw kind of kicked you in the ass and was like, you're like, figure it out. You decided to go overseas and play, but you landed locally again. Was it a tough transition? Was it one of those like no brainers? Like, how did that happen?
So, I'll make a long story short, but my first job out after playing professionally was at Anthony Travel. When I was in college, we took a foreign tour. So our basketball team, we went over to France and Italy. You sightsee, you tour, you play 3 basketball games, you do the whole thing. It's like a, 10, 11 day trip. And I met my former boss, Jim O'Connor, on that trip. And so, didn't think anything of it. He was awesome. We called him Uncle Jimmy. He was great. Like, we kind of got to know each other a little bit on that trip because he was our Anthony Travel on-site representative. And then fast forward, I was home when I was playing in Finland. Over Christmas break, went to a Notre Dame women's basketball game, was with one of my really good high school friends, and she used to nanny for the Anthonys, who owned the company Anthony Travel. So we went up and said hi to them, and their kids went to my high school, so I kind of knew their name. They were younger. I didn't know their kids, but just started talking with John Anthony and, all about my experience overseas and playing. And, he's, very inquisitive and super intelligent, and he was like, would you ever consider working for us? And, me and my whatever 23-year-old self was like, sports, travel, what's not to love? Yeah, of course. So then literally 2 months later, I get an email or a call, I don't even remember, when I'm still living in Finland, from Jim O'Connor. And he was like, hey, we've got a position open. Are you interested? We would love for you to apply, kind of thing. Long story short, I applied for it. And it was one of those things that it just kind of fell into my lap, happened so fast, didn't have a ton of time to – it was just an opportunity that I didn't think I wanted to pass up, right? Like basketball was great and traveling was great and I loved it. But, at some time you have to transition into the adult real world. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it just seemed like a really great opportunity and something that I didn't want to pass up. So there wasn't a lot of thought back into, I'm moving back home in South Bend. They offered me the position. It was kind of a long, kind of a long interview process and the whole thing. And so they offered me the job 2 weeks before I was reporting back to my team in Puerto Rico.
Oh.
And I was like, motherfucker. Oh, my God. I'm already committed to this team. This is my first real opportunity at a job. What do I do? And so I said, forget it. I'm just going to – went to lunch with Jim O'Connor. And he was a former Division II head coach basketball. So he's a basketball junkie.
Yeah.
Totally gets it. So thank God he had that going for him. And I'm like, Jim, this is an offer that I do not want to pass up. I'm so excited. However, I'm supposed to be in Puerto Rico in 2 weeks. I've already committed to my team. it's a really short season. So Puerto Rico kind of crams an entire season into like 3 months. I was like, I leave in August. I'll be home by Thanksgiving. Is there any way I can just go play this one last season? And then when I'm back, I'm back. And he's like, Jesus, how am I going to say no to that? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, go have fun. And he was like, but when you come back, like, I don't want you leaving in another 3 months. He's like, when you're here for good and you're going to work. And I'm like, absolutely. So I was very lucky that they gave me that opportunity. But came back in December of 2013 to start. And it was like the worst winter. I'm sure nobody remembers like the year and the winter. But I mean, snow up to your eyes. It was like minus 20 wind chill, that whole thing. And I had been living in like 85 degree weather. Oh. So not only was I transitioning from just an awful, like, right, I practiced 2 hours a day and I got to do whatever I wanted the rest of the time, living on a beach.
Getting paid for that. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Condo, like cool, whole thing. Come back to just the worst weather. And then I had my first 8-to-5 job. Mm-hmm. And our office was in a basement, so no windows kind of thing. Oh, and right, like any job, when you first start, you're not like slammed with work. So I would be like, Jim, hey, you know, what can I do? What should I help you with? I already finished that little task. And he was like, you know, I'll get back to you. Hang on. And you know, shoot, I would like sit there for a little bit. And he would like jokingly come up and he's like, you're going to thank me one of these days because you're going to be so busy soon enough that you're going to wish that you had this time where you could just like sit here and not do anything. But to be honest, I was absolutely miserable the first like 2 months because I'm like, what the hell?
And
like,
then you got mono.
Oh, yeah. And then I got mono.
Oh.
So it was like this 8-to-5 thing is for the birds. I'm like, it's freezing cold back home.
It's making you sick.
Yeah. I'm working in a basement. I got mono. I was like, oh, my God. I made every wrong decision possible.
What's wrong with my life right now?
Oh, God. So it was a, like, on, I love when people ask because they're like, man, was that transition into the working world? And I'm like, oh, it was awful for me.
It was terrible. Sure.
Like, it was awful.
Absolutely. Did it eventually pick up and you really wish that you had that time back?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And Jim was just cracking up because he's like, I knew it. I told you. And he's amazing. Like, he's for, I am so, I've had amazing, I've had two bosses, right? My current one and Jim. And I have just been so freaking lucky. I've had the best leaders, the coolest people to, you know, show me how you can manage somebody and not be a complete asshole all the time. And yeah, so it my work eventually picked up and it was an awesome experience. Yeah. So I did that for like 4.5 years. But God, that was a very long story. So yes, it was a tough transition into the working world.
So you were just talking about like you've had the best bosses and they've showed you how to lead. What, like, give us a couple of things that you've learned, like a couple of key things that you've learned from, whether it be from Muffet or from your boss at Anthony Travels or from Notre Dame. What have you, three key things that you've learned throughout that?
So number one, and it's, I think, probably the thing that's most talked about and nobody actually ever executed it, and it's so simple, right? Just communication. I don't care what you're doing, how busy you are. If Sam has a problem with me, like, she needs to sit me down and talk to me about it, right? Because it could be – we could be on completely different wavelengths. So that is, like, the easiest one. Number two, I would say, is – just kind of watching the leaders that I've watched, right? We're all human. There are days we're going to make mistakes and there are days where we're going to be really, really great. As long as you are just completely busting your ass for everything and everyone has the right intention. Look at your coworkers, right? If somebody messes up, they're not doing it intentionally. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned that there's a way to handle that and there's a way to, you know, bring someone into the office and show them and teach them and make them grow as a person, right? Like, we are all going to mess up. Like, we're humans. It's part of it. I don't care at what level you're at. You're all going to mess up. And there's just a very good way to handle that. And I think a lot of leaders don't know how to do that effectively. And I think the great ones have figured it out and they've been able to relate, right? Because I respond differently than Sam responds, than you, Angie, and I think the good ones can figure out what makes you tick and how I can relate to you to where then you're going to respond and be effective instead of like go cry in the corner or, you know, just walk away and say, fuck that guy. He doesn't, or girl, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And, you know, just continues to motivate people to want to work. So that would be kind of a segue into number three is, right, like every job has a grinding phase. My job is the travel part of it, is the grind. And I think the great bosses are understanding and flexible, and also at the same time know how to continue to motivate you, right? Whether it's, you know, I've got a coworker that has just had an amazing year. Like, he has crushed his goals and he's doing fantastic, yet my boss, Sarah, can still connect with him and push him without just being a dick. Like, mm-hmm. he's had a great year. That's great. But, like, man, the finish line's coming up and she can just find a way to motivate him and me, who is, I'm in my first year, right? And I'm nowhere near my goal. And she just has a way to continue to motivate me where it's not, like, condescending. And, you know, you just kind of figure out what works. But, and they all sound so simple, but I think it is, you know, something that leaders, you know, I don't know what it is, if it's ego or what, with, you know, just, mm-hmm. ignorance or what yeah. it is with the bad leaders, but the good ones have figured it out and have learned how to communicate and motivate and do all those things really effectively.
It's yeah. almost like recognition and perspective, right? Yeah. And understanding that not everybody thinks the way that you do,
mm-hmm.
and trying to figure out how you can meet halfway,
right?
To get to, I mean, because at the end of the day, you're all heading for one goal.
Exactly.
And how you can all get there together
and
to,
like,
do it.
As a leader, do you have the confidence to, you know, I think some people, yeah. right, it's an ego thing, like they want to be demeaning and things like that because they think yeah. this next person is going to upstage them and make them look like an yeah. idiot. Well,
comes from fear, sure.
Yeah,
fear,
exactly.
of their, you know, yeah. and insecurity. We had Scott McFarland on, now this will be a couple weeks ago, but he's you know, he's a CEO of my corporation, and he's also a football coach, you know, and so those two things kind of go hand in hand, good leaders, good coaches,
right,
kind of the
right.
same things. And he talked about, you know, the good leaders, the good coaches, when the team wins, the credit goes to the team. When the team loses, it's the coach's fault, you know, and that's the yep. way that it should be, and that's the way that he looks at it. So he continues to build up his team and to give them the credit, because they're the ones who are working hard and getting it done, and it, that responsibility falls on him,
yep.
you know. So, and I think a lot of good leaders do that too. You know, yeah. they.
Let me ask you, Stacey, do you feel like you ever compliment, like, your boss or, like, your CEO that was in here?
What do you mean?
Like, do you, right, like, I feel like as my boss or whoever, yeah. right, whoever you're working
yeah.
for, it's kind of part of their repertoire to know when they need to, like, compliment you
oh,
and kind of pick you
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like it's hard to reciprocate
oh, for
that.
For sure. Yeah.
Like,
no,
you don't want to look like a kiss ass. And
yeah, yeah.
It's weird.
I get what you're saying. Absolutely. Because a lot of times, too, we think of the role of the leader is just like the role of a parent. You know, it's
yeah,
their
yeah.
job to compliment, you know,
right.
whereas it would probably be, even though my kids do this sometimes, but it would probably, it's a little bit more different or weird, I guess, if the kids are the ones who are complimenting the parents.
Right.
So same kind of idea. So yeah, certainly. You know, I'm fortunate enough that we've developed a relationship where, you know, Scott, when you ask him what he does, he says he works at a credit union, you know, so he's not the kind of, he doesn't have that ego,
right,
where, so it's more of, I feel like I'm on the same team with him, so I can compliment him.
Yep.
And we work together a lot. And so, you know, after he's done doing a recording for a video that I'm shooting, or we have a monthly kind of series that goes out where I'm like, hey, you did a great job, like, that was awesome, you know. So, but I think that comes from building that relationship, mm-hmm. where the leader makes you feel like you're part of the team. And a good leader surround themselves with people who know more than they do about things that
Absolutely.
They don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of
yeah.
does the same thing. And so there's this open communication. I have worked under leaders in my past where that wasn't the case. And so it would
yeah.
have been a little bit weirder to give that feedback. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying, especially
yeah.
earlier on, you know, early on in your career or early on in a position where maybe you haven't had a lot of those, you know, relationships. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I totally can see that. It feels unnatural a little bit sometimes.
Yeah,
it does. But sometimes you can find, like, one-offs that to compliment them on. Like, we just did a wellness challenge at work, and my boss and I were back and forth on, like, competing, and we were really pushing each other. And at one point, like, I texted her and I was like, how are you? Like, you are a machine.
Yeah.
You are older than I am
right.
and you are a machine right now. What is going on? And it was a compliment for her. She was like, LOL, blah, 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 blah. But it was also a bonding experience for us. So sometimes you can carve out those like outside of the box opportunities that aren't necessarily related to work, but they are in a certain sort of a way. Mm-hmm. And like provide those sort of uplifting sorts of things to develop that bond as well.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's also... It's a great question, yes, one I haven't really thought about ever. But I think it's very important to do it just because on a human level, right? You know, I think it's important to love on people regardless, you know?
I agree. Yeah.
And so it's like, if it's coming from a genuine place, you know, why not?
Even if other people think you're being a kiss ass, like, who cares? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, that's not really... If that's not your intent, then whatever, man.
Right, right. And like, they'll see through
that. They can think what they want, too. Yeah. I mean, it's not really even about that.
When you think about it, like, if they're doing their job right, they're working harder than all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
God, both bosses, everyone that's ever managed me, like, just works their ass off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've got meetings all day, and they're sending emails and they're traveling and the whole thing. And I'm like... Mm-hmm. God, why I should compliment you more. Like, you are killing it. But
and it's
just
motivation, right?
Yeah,
like
it's
huge motivation.
Absolutely. It's just it is interesting to think about that.
It is.
Because I'm like, I don't, and it's silly, but on the rare occasion, you know.
Yeah.
Like, maybe four times a year I say something, like, really nice.
Yeah. I mean, like, once every quarter, just put on, you know, Q1. Here's quarterly. My Q1 compliment.
Exactly.
Here's my Q2 compliment.
I'm going to start calling that. Q1 comp.
So, Melissa, I'm curious. Like, you just mentioned, we were talking about, like, the three things that you've learned from, like, these bosses that have really led you. And you mentioned Sam and communication and things like that. You sort of live in a more conservative town, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. A more conservative town. And, you know, you and Sam, you've got a fiance who happens to be a woman.
And,
right?
Oh, she cute, too.
She is. You guys are great. But, what's that like? When sort of tell us about how, like, did you know when you were playing for Notre Dame? Were you aware of it? Were you out?
Good questions. I'm a self-proclaimed late bloomer. I didn't know. I dated a lot of men in college. Even overseas was still like dating men. I will say, going back to great leaders, right? I vividly remember Coach McGraw before practice started. She brought in. Now I can say this. I have some amazing friends, best friends to this day that I played with who were. You know, they acted like they were straight in college because they felt like they couldn't be themselves in that environment. Yeah. And, you know, Notre Dame has come a long way, but gosh, even 06 to 10, right? It wasn't this super LGBTQ friendly place. And I've got a lot of teammates that kind of came out later in life and were like, oh my gosh, like that sucked. Like it was awful. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember even as a, you know, straight person back then, how that sounds really stupid, but I remember Coach pulling us in before practice and she was like, so upset and was just like, guys, I just caught wind that some of you were making fun of the LGBT community. And she was like, I am so upset. She was like, I have a ton of friends in the gay community. We are better than that. Like, we, like, so much of our fan base is gay, and was so upset that some of the people on the team, and I don't even know if it was one or six or I couldn't tell you, but I will never forget that moment. Like, oh my gosh, she took a stand before, like, taking a public stance on, you know, supporting human rights, and that whole thing was a thing. Like, that was, like, back in 2008. And so she's always just been this awesome kind of, I don't even know what I'm trying to get at, but
like she made it okay.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And again, like it wasn't even relevant to me at that time, but it's just so cool to think back. Like, God, she was always amazing. But so fast forward, started 2012. So I was like 23-ish. I'm looking at Sam like I don't even remember.
I didn't know you yet.
Yeah, I know. So I was living in Puerto Rico, and it was the first time that I started – well, I had, like, one female that was, like, aggressive, and then we kind of started dating. And, it just kind of progressed from there and realized that I enjoyed it, and we had a good relationship. So kind of dated her for a little bit, and then – Yeah. So that was, gosh, 2013. And it was kind of, that was all she wrote from there and never looked back.
So there was never this like big proclamation
or
anything like that. I mean, did you, you know, telling your family or even coming back to the area, you're pretty well known. I mean, your name at the very least is pretty well known in the area. Is it something that you feel like you need to explain? Is it something that you've ever run into where it's created awkward moments, things like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. All of the above, right? Like you said, South Bend is extremely conservative and, mm-hmm. I think that's very unfortunate. The entire state of Indiana, right? Like it's just, we're so far behind where we need to be in that area as a country. You know, Puerto Rico is a very anti-gay, obviously it's a U.S. territory, but yeah, I remember hanging out with a big group of, you know, women from the basketball community who was playing there. I mean, we literally got kicked out of a bar because it was a group of gay women. And so yeah, there have been a ton of awkward moments, you could say. There was no, you know, huge revelation to my family. I had a conversation with my mom. You know, my dad has been.
We to this day don't know that he knows.
He knows. Sure. Stop it.
I mean, you guys are getting married, yeah. Right?
He knows, but it wasn't like I never like actually sat him down and had this conversation with him. I had a conversation with my mom and my brother, and like it was not this, you know, super warm welcome. We still love you, and I know they love me, and they've come a long way. It's been a good evolution, but. It's not your super successful coming out story, but there also wasn't, you know, this giant like revelation moment where, you know, I sat them down and like explained everything because I was still dealing with it and figuring it out. And it was very new to me. And I had to be okay with it before I then kind of like revealed this or, I mean, even my like pseudo conversations, right? It was, it's a tough time and everybody deals with it differently. Like my sister is extremely religious and I would say she's still not okay with it. And we have it's a weird, for lack of a better word. It's a weird relationship. She lives in Denver. But like my brother's wife is she's amazing and huge loves advocate. Us. And my brother has been amazing recently. And my parents, I mean, everybody has kind of like evolved and they've gotten to know Sam, which I think has been a huge piece of the puzzle, right? Like they see how happy I am and they love Sam. And but yeah, it's sad, right? Like it's sad to kind of think about everybody's different stories and some people still don't talk to their families about it. Mm-hmm. I feel fortunate enough that like we have great relationships with both of our families and yeah, it's not perfect and I think they struggled with it. And I guess I've never talked to my mom about it, but I really do think that a lot of her struggle was the fact that some people did know who I was and maybe this is way off, but like, you know, she pictured this life and grandkids and that whole thing. So I do think that there was some of that with her. A psychologist would probably tell me to talk it out with her. But yeah, it's been it's definitely been an up and down kind of. Yeah, a couple of years, well, more than a couple of years, but just trying to figure it out and manage that whole situation. And for a little bit, you're like super secretive about it. And then, you know, you start to tell some of your friends and, you know, your greatest friends, of course, in the world are like, what the fuck? Why didn't you tell us earlier?
Sure.
Like, you've been hiding it from us. And, you know, those are obviously the people that matter. And that's kind of all you care about. But yeah, it's been all over the board for me, to be totally honest. Yeah. And then obviously South Bend, it's, you know, Mayor Pete has been amazing, but yeah, we just have such a long way to come.
But I mean, Sam, as the other half of that, has it been tough for you, you know, as you guys have evolved your relationship and now you're getting married, right?
We are.
You guys are getting ready to get married, which is amazing. How has that impacted you? You know, Melissa is well known in the community and, you know, gay and well-known and, you know, like how...
Fabulous.
Well, I mean,
beautiful,
you guys
smart.
Are both fabulous. Exactly. Like that doesn't define her, but in a conservative community, you know, how has that impacted you? How do you deal with that?
And Sam's from Napanee, Indiana, which is
even
10
more
times.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
My sister came out to my parents for me. I heard text my parents and tell them like Sam's gay.
When was that? So let's
and
go
I
back
was
to that.
I'd been married for 5 years to a man was divorced. And then came out around 27.
Is that because you didn't know?
I mean,
or was it because of the like the pressures?
I grew up in such a conservative area that I don't think I ever questioned it. Because I don't think that was really allowed. So we kind of have the same journey a little bit as far as coming out later in life and navigating that together, really, with our families. So it's been, and she's obviously way more well known than I am in the community. Like, nobody knows me, but so to see her interact with fans and to be introduced as her fiance, like, that's, it's been hard to navigate at times, but it's, we've done okay, I think.
Do you ever feel like there was like a really uncomfortable moment for you? Sorry.
I love it.
No, oh, dude.
Please. I don't know.
But Sam, put the microphone just a little bit
closer.
There we go. I want to hear you.
I feel like when males that still perceived her as being straight because they hadn't seen her from like being overseas for like a long time and stuff. And we're like, oh, like Melissa, like last time we knew her, she was dating guys. And then having that revelation to them, like, oh, like this is my girlfriend. Like that can get awkward at times, but
I because mean, they feel like they have a chance,
right? Yeah, and I'm like, hey, buddy, I might be 5'3", but I'll kick your ass. No, but like that's it's a weird situation that you really never picture yourself being in.
Sure.
But
and she doesn't give it a second thought, right? Because has zero desire.
Yeah, absolutely. But but it's still a weird,
but it's tough,
weird thing to like, even like think about and.
Sam, I'm very curious because you mentioned that you were married for 5 years.
I was.
So I'm not sure if it's something you're comfortable talking about, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Did you get, was that a part of the divorce and was that a part of the trans, you know, was that part of like the, you said you came out kind of later. Did you know before you were married?
No, I mean. I've always been like a tomboy
sure.
and very just like into sports. Like Melissa and I literally played against each other in like fifth grade. We played basketball. So like I never like thought about it, but and married my high school sweetheart.
Yeah.
He was in the military. A lot of life situations come up with that.
Sure.
And turns out he was a cheating asshole.
So there's that part.
Glad you said it and not me.
But there was also towards the end of the relationship, I was in grad school and my best friend to this day, James, he was gay and I'd never had a gay best friend or gay friend at all. Like I, even though IOSB has a great community for it, I realized like, wow, like I'm really comfortable with like this community in general. Maybe I'm just an ally or maybe like I'm okay with like testing those waters out. And then I think once I figured it out, it was like, okay, Sam, like somebody probably should have told me when I was like 5 and insisted on getting like a bowl cut before heading into the first grade. And that like, maybe you're gay, sweetie. But I didn't figure that out until I was 27. So, you know, it was a little later. But I don't.
So one of us tell us your story because it's really cute and I've heard it and I'd really like to hear it again.
On how we met?
Yeah.
Melissa can take this over.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'll make it quick. So Sam already mentioned that we kind of like knew of each other. We literally played basketball like growing up against each other. My really good friend from middle school used to like work out, you know, basketball stuff all day, every day together. Ended up going to Sam's high school. So again, we kind of like knew of each other, but we never hung out. And then like 5 years ago now, I was at a party in Chicago for the Pride weekend, and my group of friends was leaving, and Sam's group of friends was coming in to the bar that we were at, and she walked up, and she looked, you know, she mentioned the bowl cut, so like that's what I remember, but her hair was really long, and she, you know, had a hat on, and I was like, she was like, hey, and I'm like, hey. And then she mentioned our mutual friend's name. And I'm like, oh, my God, Sam. Like, what the hell? How you been? And just a really quick, like, hey, how's it going? My friends are leaving. Like, good to see you. Little did I know.
I'd Facebook requested her. And She didn't accept.
I'm never on Facebook, so I didn't see it.
And so then I deleted it after a couple days. I was like, oh my God, this girl does not want to be my friend.
So fast forward like 6 weeks later in like the hottest day in August that we ever had. And we were both running on the Mishawaka Riverwalk. And I hate running and Sam is really good at it and loves it. And I'm miserable. And we're like about to approach each other as we run. And everybody kind of waves on the Riverwalk, right? Like, oh, we're all nice. We're runners. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck this. I hate my life. Like, ah, God, this sucks. It's so
and
hot.
I'm going, this is the woman that did not
right.
accept my friend request on Facebook. I want to get past her as fast as I possibly can. Like, slight wave. Like, just let's go by
head our
business.
Yeah.
So as we get closer, I'm like, oh, wow, I think I have that shirt. Of course, it was like a Notre Dame, like Irish, like leprechaun. And I'm like, I think I have that shirt. And then we pass each other. We do the stupid little Riverwalk wave. And she smiles. And then we go by each other. And I was like, probably 5 seconds later, I was like, God, I know that smile. Like, who? And I was like, oh, shit, that was Sam. And I turned around, and she was nowhere to be found.
I sprinted to my car and left.
She sprinted. My idiot ass was like, oh, let me run one more lap. I hate running as it is. I ran like 5 miles that day in like 90-degree August weather because I was like, oh, I'll for sure pass her again. Nope.
I went home.
Didn't see her. So karma, right? It all comes full circle. I reached out to our mutual friend. I was like, I think I just saw Sam in South Bend. That's weird. What? Like, what's she doing? She's like, yeah, she's teaching at Adams. And then so I reached out to her on Facebook and it was
now you guys are getting married.
Yeah, baby.
Right?
That's right. And we've got a little mini golden doodle puppy son.
Oh, you do. Lionel
Messi.
Lionel.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
I love that story.
Thank you.
It's funny how things just seem to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It
just felt like it was like two one in a million kind of opportunities. So
very
like,
kismet.
Yeah, like I would be an idiot not to reach out or
yeah.
I totally believe in like the world is sending you
puts you where you need to be.
Exactly.
At the right time. For sure.
Karma,
absolutely.
All of that.
I mean, from like Finland to Iceland to Puerto Rico
a
few times and back.
Right.
Chicago and back.
And then
to the Mishawaka Riverwalk.
Here we are.
The Mishawaka Riverwalk. Really, guys.
So serendipitous. And then this is like, everyone's always like, God, the gayest thing of all time. Our first date was like a 4 mile run around Notre Dame's campus.
Because of course I was.
I'm like, that's why wouldn't it be?
That's awesome.
It was also hot that day too.
So 5 years later, you guys are planning a wedding.
Yes.
New Year's Eve is coming up. Awesome.
Yeah. We're pumped.
So what does the future hold?
I'm going to need a little more context to that question.
We've talked about, you know, what the story leading up until now. You guys, you're starting this, you know, new career with Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you've left the teaching profession, correct?
Yes.
And you're doing something else. What are you doing now?
Marketing.
Okay.
Copywriting for now Lippert Components.
Nice. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
You used to teach.
I
did. You got out of it.
I taught for 2 years at John Adams
mm-hmm.
High School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you teach?
English and journalism and yearbook.
Nice.
And newspaper.
Nice. Former high school history teacher.
Nice.
So
cheers. Okay.
Cheers. What I mean by what does the future hold in terms of, I guess, well, what I'm thinking of in terms of kind of career. I mean, you guys are starting out. You're this power couple in the South Bend area. Like, what are the plans?
First of all, thank you. We love a good power couple term. So we've talked to kids. Not sure kind of when that will shake out or how. Obviously, that's like one thing that's always just so complicated in a same-sex couple. But it's on the radar for sure. Obviously, Sam just started her job. I'm, you know, in year one. I've got to be I want to really just crush my job, so I'm going to be loyal, and I'll be here for, you know, definitely a few more years. Not sure kind of what that timeline looks like, but have an amazing boss. I'm trying to soak up every ounce of information I can learn from her. She is an incredible fundraiser. She's an incredible person and leader. So long story, I have no idea what the future holds. I think that's part of what makes us great. You kind of, right? You've got different cards that are dealt to you at different situations, and whether you jump on the opportunity or not is a huge decision. And I think I think we kind of jump at the opportunities and try to just make the most of life. I mean, we travel a ton together. We are constantly doing things that we enjoy, and it's together, right? Like, mm-hmm. I travel a ton, so when I'm home, mm-hmm. like, we do stuff together and we hang out. So I have no idea what I want to do professionally as my next kind of career.
Yeah.
I know I want to be really good at this job, and it's going to take some time. So I'll be at Notre Dame for a good amount of time. I've got a great team and a great boss, and there's just, you know, great leadership in general at that university. So that's kind of my thought. But Sam, I'd love to hear from you.
I would. But I also, will you incorporate the answer to this question, please? I would really be curious to know how you sort of deal with the amount of travel that Melissa does as well.
Ooh, good question.
Just, I mean, from a,
I don't always deal
from
with
a significant
well.
Other perspective.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
hard.
And making that relationship work.
Yeah, it's very difficult. She's gone almost every other week. And sometimes that means she's on the West Coast, which we're, what, 3 hours difference mm-hmm. then? Mm-hmm. And I try to travel with her whenever I can, and she's great about that. And one thing with this new job at Notre Dame is that I can go with her whenever I can, you know, make that fit in my schedule. But we have discussions. One that regularly comes up is when she's gone, she's out to dinner and wining and dining with people like all week long and talking. And I'm usually just at home with our sweet puppy, Lionel.
It leaves you so much time to think, right?
So much time to think. So much time just by myself. And I'm like, so when she gets home, I'm like, let's go out. Like, let's do dinner. Let's go out for drinks. And she's like, I just need to, like, not talk to people. Like, maybe not even you, but, like.
It's the last thing I want to do is, like, go out for another meal or mm-hmm. a drink. I'm just like, God.
And I've been cooped up all week, so I'm just like, I'm ready to, like, hit the town. And it's a point of contention in our relationship, I would say, but we manage it as well as we can.
AKA, I'm always going out.
Yes.
That is what happens. But only for like an hour or two, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Depends. But we do okay managing it. This job is much better with flexibility and her being home mm-hmm. when she can be home. And like she can not just pick up and go the next day, and she can kind of play on her own schedule, which is nice.
Yeah. The travel piece is definitely hard, though. I mean, for you, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I
mean, so back to what Stacey originally asked, like, what do you see in the future? Like, what's next? What do you see coming up?
I know we have nieces and nephews that are local, and it's hard to, whatever opportunity comes up, it's hard to just say that we'll pick up and go wherever when we have family so close. And if, maybe we'll have kids in a couple of years, and that's definitely going to change things because we'll want babysitters. Long story short.
Oh, it's very nice to be around babysitters.
We do love Southwest Michigan, though.
Yes.
And a much cooler state.
Michigan would be about the furthest.
Stacey is a big proponent of Buchanan.
Have you ever been to Buchanan?
Yeah.
Your all beautiful the time. Golf course. Yes.
She's a big proponent of Bucktown.
Yeah,
I'll love it.
We'll find you a place. It's only the best.
At that
small
point,
town.
Her kids will be old enough to babysit. You guys will be good.
As long as they YouTube video the babysitting session, I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So dance.
Yeah, your kids might be like on dance tutorials, but it's fine.
It's fine. I feel like that's going to happen anyways, regardless of who's babysitting.
It's happening.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, that's thank you guys for coming. You know, I love what you talked about in terms of, you know, growing up in this community and just your continual drive and things you've learned from great leaders. And I have a feeling, you know, we have two leaders in the room here with us that you guys are learning from these experiences that you're having, and you're going to utilize that as your careers progress because they're kind of babies, Angie. They're like,
but the candid conversation can't be beat, right?
I
mean, the candid conversation that comes from these two is sort of like, I mean, it's why we're friends. And it's also why I knew they were absolutely perfect for this mm-hmm. podcast is because like, that's what people want. And that's mm-hmm. what they need. The authenticity that comes from them is tenfold. And that's really at the end of the day, what should make the world go round at mm-hmm. this point. It might not, but it really should.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, developing that tribe, and that's what we've talked a lot about. And you've hit on that a couple times about, you know, friends that you talk about this great group of friends and this great network mm-hmm. of friends and people that have your back.
And leaders.
And that's kind of what we strive for here. And that's what we try to promote, this tribe of women, but men too. 20% of our listeners are males.
They are.
And
the good ones.
Yeah.
I actually brought that. So yeah. I'm going to totally sidetrack right now. So I brought that up to my boss last night. Actually, we had dinner and we were talking about the podcast. And I told her that 20% of our listeners were men, and that at one point somebody had said, like, it was sort of like listening in on like a women's conversation happening in the kitchen that mm-hmm. you knew you weren't supposed to be listening to, but like you mm-hmm. learned a lot from. And she said that there was one point in her life where she had just moved back to wherever they were at, and she had had a bunch of women over. It was her turn to have like coffee talk at their house, and her husband was sitting in the kitchen. And later on, after everybody had sort of left, he was like, it was so interesting to hear like all of the things that you guys are saying. And instantaneously, I was like, it's our podcast.
Yeah.
It 100% is.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. And
we love our male listeners.
We do. And it's all about, you know, making those connections. We live in a world where connections seem pretty fake and cheap a lot of times. Right. So anytime you have those genuine connections and that real authenticity, I think that puts a little bit more goodness out into the world, and that's what we need. So we love that you guys were here tonight and you guys shared your experiences with us. And it was fascinating to hear the stories. Yeah, I think it's good stuff.
It is. I just want to say on behalf of both of us, it's an honor to be here. You ladies are killing it. Your podcast is amazing. And like you said, Angie, just the authenticity of it. It's real. People are real. They let their guards down. So you guys are doing amazing things. And we appreciate, as fellow listeners, you know what? I'm not subscribed, though. Oh, my God. What? I just realized that.
I love that you just called yourself out. I wouldn't have known.
Well, because you said it earlier.
We can't be friends until that.
I'm going to do it as soon as I leave. Right, but like, now. I'm not a huge – I listen to podcasts on occasion, Melissa, and yours. And I'm like, I am going to subscribe as soon as I leave here. Uh-huh. I just didn't know that was.
It needs to happen.
I didn't know.
So here's the benefit of subscribing, that it just pops up in your podcast app as soon as it's ready. So it doesn't mean you have to listen to it right away. It's just there already.
Great lesson for the listeners, though, right? Like, subscribe with me, because these ladies are killing the game and it's amazing. So it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having both of us.
Absolutely.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for talking, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, oh my God. Glad. Woo, that was great, Sammy.
Awesome. I'm head nodding over here, guys. Yeah. I told her.
And winking. Oh, it's getting weird.
Don't be jealous, Melissa. It's fine.
We're going to have to call Todd the Bot in here.
I have a quote.
Oh, you got a social share.
I do. Hey, I have a social share.
Go ahead.
Because I looked it up. And really, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you guys talked about a lot of things, but, you know, what I love about both of you is that you've found your way to your true selves and you make no apologies. And I love it. You're open to talking about the journey that you went through to get there and where you're at right now and that it might change, you know, all of those things. So I sort of looked up, Googled, like quotes on being true to yourself. And really, I found one that I actually really like and doesn't tell me who it's by, so forgive me. But it says, don't let others box you into their ideas of what they think you should be. A confined identity is a miserable way to exist. Be you, live free, trust that in living true to yourself, you'll attract people that support and love you just as you are. And I feel like you guys embody that. Yeah. I feel like you, like, that's where you're living right now. Like, you have cultivated a life where you are surrounded by people who support who you are and how you live. And man, I love you both for it.
We love you, Angie.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. Too. Yeah.
Sorry. But I mean, shoot, that's what life's about.
I'm getting all sappy over here. I'm really sorry, guys.
Like, oh my God, you're so cute. I love it.
I get a little deep in my podcast. Stacey loves it.
She does. I'm like, you just do the best job crafting it up.
That's great. But like, why live life if you're not enjoying it? Like, it's so sad when people are in shitty jobs that they hate or they're in a relationship that they hate. Yeah.
But it's tough to find your way out, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's tough to find your way out sometimes. And I guess that's why we love to have people like you on here, because you provide examples of ways out. Like, you guys, you both fought through it. I mean, you had those instances where, you know, you were sort of stuck in what you felt like was the appropriate place to live and how to live and dictated by social context and all of those things. And you find your way out. We're like, it, and it applies to so many different things. And man, a lot of people live that way. And so we, like, we love having people on here who exude the example of being able to fight your way through it and be happy at the end of the day. So, and I think you guys are prime examples of that. So thanks.
I'm happy. Are you happy, Sam?
I'm very happy.
One at bat.
I've had half a bottle of wine. Not gonna
One at bat. We talk about this almost every week, y'all.
We get
one at bat.
One at bat.
How are you gonna handle it? Mm-hmm. How are you gonna live it? Ain't your practice life.
It's not.
Mm-mm. So, all right. Well, we again wrapping up another great episode, Ange. For those of you out there who haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that
on
Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcast. We would love it if you would interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us at HHPod.
Give us ideas of people who you think
platforms
might belong on here. We're always looking for guests.
Yep. We have some great guests coming up as well. We have a jam-packed schedule. We got some fun ones. So
we do.
Okay, see you later, hustlers.
Hustle on.
Later.
Hustlin' in Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Angie Crocker. All views and opinions expressed on the show are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Angie on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. You can also send the show an email to letschat@HIHpod.com. Feel free to write into the show if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. So be sure to reach out to us if you've got a question, comment, want to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all the ladies have today. So make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for their newest episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.